So, warm welcome. We've got a really amazing evening. This Advice is Inquiry 17, the start of the sort of next section, if you like, of Advices and Queries, which seems to me to be all about relationship and what the Buddhists would call sangha, what Quakers would call meeting, meeting each other, meeting ourselves, relating. And, you know, a relationship that's become really, really wonderful and being important to me is Julia, who is in my area meeting of Surrey and Hampshire borders. She's just about 5 miles away at Farnborough meeting. And she very kindly and bravely and wonderfully said that she would do the offering this evening. So the prepared ministry is from Julia. And then the shape of the evening will be, so we'll listen to Julia, and then there'll be a guided meditation with me, and then we'll go into breakout rooms. And we've split the advice into three parts. So, and you'll be invited to go into the breakout room that's kind of connected to the part that you want to kind of explore more. Good. So this is being recorded for the podcast. What happens in the breakout rooms is not recorded, but then our plenary, our time together at the end will be shared as well. So just to be aware of that. Anything that happens in this main room is being offered on the podcast. Good. Warm welcome. Good to see you, John. Hello, Sonia. Lovely to see you. Good. Hi, Helen. Oh, yay. Oh, it's great to see you all. Oh, okay. So warm welcome to Julia, and I'm going to hand over to you now.
Thanks, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. So I'm going to begin with reading the number 17 and just offer a few thoughts, really. I've never done a prepared ministry before, so I put in the chat that I'm open and I'm receptive and I'm curious. So I'll make a start. So this is a large section of text, and it seems to divide itself into parts, if you like. So I'll just read it through in its entirety. Do you respect that of God in everyone, though it may be expressed in unfamiliar ways or be difficult to discern? Each of us has a particular experience of God, and each of us must find a way to be true to it. When words are strange or disturbing to you, try to sense where they come from and what has nourished the lives of others. Listen patiently and seek the truth which other people's opinions may contain for you. Avoid hurtful criticism and provocative language. Do not allow the strength of your convictions to betray you into making statements or allegations that are unfair or are untrue. Think it possible that you might be mistaken. So I'm just going to start with the first part. And it struck me that the first part is under an umbrella of respect. Do you respect that of God in everyone, though it may be expressed in unfamiliar ways, will be difficult to discern? Each of us has a particular experience of God, and must each find the way to be true to it. So I ask myself, do I respect that of God in everyone? And respect is so important. We need to feel respected by others, and we can be deeply troubled and damaged when we feel disrespected. But the question is, well, what does respect mean in action? What does it look like? And a definition of respect is to look again. To look again. And I feel that respecting that of God in everyone is so much more than the superficial politeness and courtesy of everyday life. And perhaps if we apply the definition of respect to look again, we might actually need to look again and again and again when things are unfamiliar and they're difficult to discern. And we may continue to look again over and over and still not see that of God in everyone. And there are times when I seek to respect that of God in everyone, but it's expressed in such an unfamiliar and a difficult way that I cannot see what I want to see of God, God's goodness. And having thought about this aspect, I'm wondering whether what I need to do is to be more content to respect what small aspect of God's goodness I can recognise in a person, instead of needing to find enough to satisfy me. My challenge is to respect by looking again, and being satisfied with not finding enough of God in a person, but to understand that, just like me, that person has their own unique experience of God and is finding their own way to be true to it. So when I say or do something that is unfamiliar to another person, or it's difficult for them to discern, I'd like them to respect me by looking again and again, and trusting that in my own way, I have that of God within me, and I am trying to find my way to be true to that. So, moving on to the central section of this, number 17. When words are strange or disturbing to you, try to sense where they come from and what has nourished the lives of others. Listen patiently and seek the truth which other people's opinions may contain for you. This part struck me as turning inwards and taking heed. When words are strange or disturbing to you, try to sense where they come from and what has nourished the lives of others. So how can I sense what lies behind unkind words, offensive comments, discriminatory words, and not allow a difference between me and the other person to become a division and a divide. For example, my first reaction when I hear racist language, for example, is to retreat. I want to get away from it as far as possible. So I've just got an example of some strange and disturbing language that I heard in had in conversation with a Quaker recently, who said in conversation, we were having quite a relaxed conversation. She said, aren't descendants of slavery better off in the long run now they're living in Europe? And my initial reaction to this very gentle, very compassionate Quaker was I ignored the remark. It was so strange and it was so disturbing. And having thought about it for some weeks, I, through looking at this, advices and queries, I wanted to commit myself to discover more about what has nourished her life. What journey has she travelled, to understand where her view is coming from? But I realise I need help. I need God's help. I need the Spirit to help me to do this, because I really don't want to do it. I would rather leave it and tell myself that's her view. Don't look for, don't create problems, don't make it worse by opening it up. But sensing, I feel, is different. And what is sensing? And Quakers often use the word discernment to be in a frame of mind of patient, expectant waiting for greater insight. And I try to check my assumptions and to look at the God in everyone. But as I touched on before, sometimes I just feel I can't see enough of God in a person to satisfy me. It's not enough. And I feel like I need to find more. But I do believe God is in all people, and this belief changes everything for me. For me, sensing is more about trying to look at things through the eyes of the Spirit. And I've started to imagine, well, what does God see? I've been lent a book, it's called Signs, and it describes how a giraffe has the biggest heart of any land mammal. And proportionately very small ears. And I wonder if sensing is also something around listening with the heart and not with the ears. And my metaphor of a giraffe is something that my mind goes to prompt me in difficult situations. And I feel that sensing combines all our capabilities of making sense of something. We use our physical senses, our emotional heart sense, our intellectual cognitive abilities, and we wait patiently for our connection with God to open up and bring us some understanding. So sensing or discerning is a complex process. I'm not very good at it. I'm not very patient. I crave for the answer. I don't find it easy to combine all those channels of input, my physical senses, what I hear, what I see, my emotional, my intellectual, and hold them in patient waiting for understanding. So going back to the comment from our Quaker friend, aren't descendants of slavery better off in the long run now they're living in Europe? I have no doubt that if I can get past my fears of causing more problems by looking again, and I can open myself to the process of sensing, that when an opportunity to talk with her arises, and it will, her opinion will become more understandable. I don't yet know what truths will be contained for me. Perhaps that she isn't well informed with accurate information. Perhaps her own life journey to be better off in the long run is something that she feels is a goal that everyone holds, no matter the consequences. Perhaps the truths won't become clear for some time, and I will need to look again and again, keeping open to opportunities to understand what has nurtured her life. And the final section, avoid hurtful criticism and provocative language. Do not allow the strength of your convictions to betray you into making statements or allegations that are unfair or untrue. Think it possible that you may be mistaken. And we felt this came to the kind of category of wise speech. And I'd like to focus particularly on the last sentence. Think it possible that you may be mistaken. In everyday life, holding a genuine open mind to the possibility that I might be mistaken can make me feel very vulnerable. I like to be right, and I don't like to be found wrong. I can feel shamed, I can feel embarrassed, and I feel critically exposed. When found to be mistaken, I can feel guilt and my self-esteem is knocked. Well, I thought I was right, but I wasn't. I'm a terrible person, and I've got no understanding of life. And often I hold back from speaking about issues and topics which I'm very passionate about, because I know how easily the strength of my convictions will overtake me. And in my effort to convey a point of great importance, I can exaggerate and I can make statements which are unfair and they are hurtful. But I want to try to be able to express my convictions strongly, but to be able to do so in a reasonable way, holding the view that I might be mistaken changes that approach completely. And in turn, I think if we hold that view, it can change the response of the listener, and it can give more room to engage in a meaningful way. And I'd like to finish with a kind of open question, which is, what do we do when we know we are right and we are not mistaken? So, for example, at work recently, I had a situation where my manager was allocating me cases to work on under the newly refreshed job description, which says that my post shouldn't be holding cases. And I wondered what would have happened if we'd have had a meeting with my manager and I to discuss this, and I had taken the view that I was mistaken. I don't need to hold cases, you're right. Would my manager have steamed ahead, carried on allocating me cases, or would she have responded by going back to the job description and having another look at it, getting a better understanding of it? I don't know. So my question is, Should we always keep the notion that we could be mistaken? Are there exceptions to this approach? Or is it always a vehicle to open up room for purposeful interaction? Thank you. That's the end of my input.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you, Julia. That was amazing, wonderful. So what we'll do is a short sort of guided meditation, and then we'll go into breakout rooms. So I invite you, and this is a meditation that's inspired by Thich Nhat Hanh and his work with wise speech and dealing in sort of conflict situations. So, yeah, I invite you to find a position that's comfortable. If you need to get a blanket or another cushion or adjust your posture in any way, maybe roll your shoulders. Good. So when you're ready, closing your eyes, taking a deep breath, and breathing out, and seeing if it's possible for the in-breath to be as long as the out-breath. So maybe a count of four as you're breathing in, and a count of four as you're breathing out. Maybe do that a few more times. Good. And this time I'm going to invite you to let some words ride the in-breath. So breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. And breathing out, I relax my whole body. It's coming into your body. Maybe you've been doing a lot of head thinking. Perhaps you can drop down out of your thinking mind and into your body, into your chest, your arms, your hands. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I relax my whole body. Dropping into the tummy, the pelvic floor, the legs, and the feet. Breathing in, I'm aware of my body. Breathing out, I smile to my body. Breathing in, I'm aware if there is pain in my body. Breathing out, I smile to the pain in my body. Breathing in, aware. Breathing out, I smile. Breathing in, I'm aware of pain in my mind. Breathing out, I smile to the pain in my mind. I am meeting myself where I am. Breathing in, I'm aware of the feeling of fear in me. And breathing out, I smile to the fear in me. Breathing in, I'm aware of the feeling of sadness in me. Breathing out, I smile to the feeling of sadness. Breathing in, I'm aware of the feeling of anger. Breathing out, I smile to the feelings of anger. In, out. May this practice of taking heed of difficult emotions benefit our whole system, our relationship to each other, to our families, to our all our connections. And when you're ready, friends, you can open your eyes. And to try and make three
new perspective on respect, to look again, to look again, to look again. I've never come across that meaning for respect. And there are so many situations where not rushing to conclusions and looking again is just absolutely the right thing to do, the absolutely helpful thing. So if I'm often challenged as to whether I need to actually explain to the other person, well, actually some confusion and doubt has come into me because I'm not quite congruent with what you've said, or I think it doesn't have to be said the first time. I think you can hold it for a while and you can reflect on it. Look again and respect oneself. Look again and respect oneself for that confusion and sit with it for a while before actually trying to explain to the other person that there is a little bit of a mismatch going on. That's where it landed with me. Thank you, Karen.
Good. Anyone else in room one want to share?
I was making a very personal point that I think I'm at the point where I've been doing a lot of rereading of books that have been important to me, and I've just been reading Rebecca Solnit and her lovely book, A Field Guide to Getting Lost. A Field Guide to Getting Lost. And she makes the point that we spend all our time, you know, getting our world nicely fixed so we know where we are. And there comes a point where actually we need to get lost again. And I think that's what I've done deliberately with my spiritual bearings, that as I approach the end of my life, I've just decided I've had enough of God talk and looking for God and all that, and just realizing that in doing that, I'm joining a lot of the human race who have also got to that point where they've never started talking about God in the first place, but they do have a spiritual life. They don't talk about it, they live it. And I put myself in the most difficult place to live this, because I'm living in a community of retired clergy people. But it's a great relief to be able to do that for myself personally, as well as a great discomfort.
Thank you so much, Peter. Anyone else in room one want to share?
Just to say briefly, thank you very much, Julia. It was very helpful. And this whole idea of look again and looking again is something that I'm going to take with me into a difficult situation in my life.
Thank you, Mo. Okay, room two. Can someone, would anyone like to share from room two? So, I'm gonna pass. That's okay. Anyone else? So room three. Go ahead.
I wound up sharing a nonverbal kind of taking a step back and looking for looking for the connection to God in the other person that was disturbing me. And it was a wonderful conversation, and both Julie and Sue gave me some great pointers about why this particular person was always invading my space. And anything else that I'm missing that would be important for the group, do you think? I'm looking at you too. So that was about it.
Thank you. And group three, would anyone like to share from group three? We were looking at why speech, I think, and how to, a bit of Rachel Rosenberg came into that, NVC. Would anyone like to share?
Yes, I mean, what I got out of it was, how do you express your opinions without being destructive and judgmental? Which is why I brought in Rachel Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Sort of saying what you feel rather than being passing judgment. Being able to sort of express your opinions, because if you're constantly self-effacing, then you lose your voice. But at the same time, you don't want to be domineering and arrogant and destructive.
Anybody else in group three?
Julia, I wanted to say a very heartfelt thank you. It was very moving, very, very helpful and positive. And as Catherine said, we talked about honouring our voices. That felt very important to me as well. And I'm going to take away the image of the giraffe. We did an awful task at work where we were all allocated to a category, and I was the wrong category. I was the opposite of a great leader, and we were given an animal, and I was given the giraffe. And you've just told me such a beautiful thing that I'm really glad I was the giraffe, so thank you.
Gosh, well, thank you all so, so much. And again, thank you so much, Julia, for that amazing introduction and framing of this advice. Next month is Advice and Careers number 18. If anyone feels led to do a prepared ministry on that, please get in touch. I would love to hear from you. We have, yay, there's the giraffe. Gorgeous. Very good.
But there's NBC.
NBC.
Store in California. This is Jerry Giraffe.
Brilliant.
I love Jerry. Hi, everyone.
And just wave at me if you're going to be at the Swarthmore lecture in person at the weekend. Not in person, but you'll be online.
In person, I'll be there.
Okay.
Online.
Well, I was hoping I'd maybe get to see some of you.
What lecture at the weekend?
The Swarthmore lecture at Britain Yearly Meeting.
Oh, you can get it online, can you?
Yes, you certainly can, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually...